Good morning, everyone. Welcome to week number 12 of COVID leave of absence Q&A session. We know that the seemingly endless changes in the rules associated with these leaves, the complexity of the process, and just the plain old volume of so many leaves has left you feeling some days like you're just part of a sitcom. During these COVID leaves, whether you felt like you could never escape the office, longed just to be hanging out with friends, or wanted to get away at the parks and recreation, or maybe just hang out with your crew at your favorite coffee shop and talk about nothing, we hope these Q&A sessions have provided you some stress relief and maybe a smile. Today's format is really a sitcom format. We think it will be over and done in about 30 minutes. Today's episode is entitled Ventura County Expands Reopening. We are only going to discuss two questions today, and they've been selected because they repeat some themes and some general questions that we've heard throughout the week. So we hope these address the issues that have brought you here today. Our show today is brought to you commercial-free by our CEO Benefits Team and the Disability Management Division of Risk Management. The show stars are Tracy Sewell, Ken Mizuno, Courtney Bishop, Jess Alanez, and myself. And for those of you who were not with us last week, we had introduced Jess at that point. He is our newest member to our disability management team, and I welcome him to say a hello to you this morning.
Good morning, everyone.
So Jess and Courtney will be working together in disability management. They already are. And they are your contacts from here on out on questions you have about leaves and accommodation. Our supporting role for today is all of you who are participating, and you can have an additional shot at superstardom if you'd like to put your cameras on and let yourselves be seen. Our show today will be in three parts. First, we're gonna have our opening credits, which will be done by Tracy, where she will be providing you some information just as final follow-up from our Q&A last session. Then we will go by the script where we will be doing our Q&As. Ken and Courtney will be reading through those with the rest of us supporting. And the last part of the show is just improvisation. It's your opportunity to share your questions, ideas, or concerns with the group. So before we get started, we're just going to clear up a little bit of housekeeping. Tracy, would you like to do that part for everyone?
Sure. Just so everyone knows, you all have been muted just to cut down on the background noise. If you do need to ask a question, please type it in the chat box. We're all watching that, and we'll answer those questions as soon as we can.
Okay, so I think our show is ready to begin. Tracy, you want to kick us off?
Sure. So I just wanted to give a quick update. Last week, we had talked about EDD doing audits on any employees who are collecting unemployment benefits. Anna Cruz, as we talked about last week, Anna Cruz gets the notifications anytime someone applies and is going to be approved for unemployment, and she responds with what the work status is of the employee. We get also a quarterly report of anybody who's actually collecting unemployment. We got the first quarter report, which goes through the end of March. There were three employees on it. One of them is working full-time teleworking and had marked lack of work and is collecting unemployment benefits. So this is how we will know if employees are collecting, kind of double dipping. So we have notified the agency of that one employee who's collecting and working full time. And we will continue to do so. We'll reach out to you if we do see something like that. We expect the second quarter report obviously to be a lot larger because that will be April through June. That's it.
Great. All right. Now we're off to the script. Ken and Courtney, you guys want to get us started?
Yep. We're going to pick up where we left off with question 74. So we have employees currently teleworking. They would like to continue teleworking either because they are high risk or live with someone that is high risk. Supposedly, documentation was provided from healthcare provider indicating something to the effect that employees should remain telecommuting for these reasons. It seems the documentation is generic and doesn't provide much info. The department would like a little more information, but wants to stay away from the medical diagnosis. Can the department contact healthcare provider to seek additional information? Can the department ask employee to provide additional information from the doctor? If so, what type of documentation can we ask?
The answer is yes. The LOA/accommodation coordinators can contact the healthcare provider to seek information if information is missing, misleading, or needs clarification. We do want to make sure we are providing our county accommodation request form to have completed by the healthcare provider. That will help gather all necessary information needed without disclosing the diagnosis. By providing the County of Ventura accommodation form, that should ask all the questions needed geared towards an accommodation. If more clarification is needed, the LOA/accommodations coordinator can contact the provider and ask only for the clarification about the work restrictions. It is recommended that the coordinator gets the employee's permission to contact the provider and encourage the employee to also assist in getting the needed clarification/documentation. LOA accommodations should be revisited at regular intervals to determine if any of the restrictions have changed and to assess if the accommodation is still reasonable.
Are there any follow-up questions to that, number 74?
I don't see any yet.
No. Okay. So moving along, question 75. We have an employee that chose to self-quarantine but is teleworking. The office will soon be requiring staff to return to the office. The employee wants to continue to self-quarantine and telework. I believe the self-quarantine is because he doesn't want to bring anything home that could compromise the spouse's immune system. What recourse does the supervisor have? Does the employee need to provide documentation supporting the need to self-quarantine? I know that in a previous Zoom, questions 37 and 38, it talks about living and caring for high-risk family members. And I took that as far as out on leave. So I wanted to ask these questions from a telework standpoint.
The answer is, if the agency orders are to return to work, teleworking will now be considered an accommodation. A request will need to be made for an accommodation with supporting documents, such as medical documentation. Departments are encouraged to be flexible in considering accommodation options, while employees who fall into the category procure the appropriate documentation.
And it just doesn't look like we have any follow-up questions on those pieces. So hopefully that information is helpful to people, as we are aware that a lot of operations throughout the county are slowly expanding, they're reopening, some a little more accelerated than others, depending upon business operations and needs. But we think that these two questions sort of touch on the heart of a lot of the issues that we are getting or have been getting over the course of the past week. So with that, we do want to turn it over to those of you who are with us today to let people have an opportunity to share any questions, concerns, thoughts, ideas you have with regards to these issues, any other issues, but we think in particular, if there's issues specific to the reopening process where you have questions or concerns, that seems to be a thing that everyone is facing right now. So we'll give it a minute or two to see if people want to put forth any ideas or questions specific to that particular area. You guys are very quiet. Is anyone out there today?
43 participants, so
this is our quietest meeting yet, which I know that means it's all things are good or bad.
Hopefully that's a good thing.
I hope it's a good thing. All right. Well, it does not look like people have anything that they're interested in sharing or asking about for today. So definitely, as we've said to you before, we will continue to do these, even if they're a more shortened sitcom version. And we're happy to do it if it answers questions that people have. Oh. So someone asked, can we get the accommodation form emailed to them? And Ken, can you say hi to Radar?
Patting him on the head.
We can actually post. Oh, go ahead, Ken.
No, I just wanted to mention that we got some help. Thank you, Jess. He put the, I think there was an accommodation. Or was it the ADA form that you did on a fillable format?
He's muted. Oh.
Okay.
Nope.
So if he, if you need that for any reason, we can email that to you as well.
That was the ADA certification.
That was ADA. Okay, excuse me.
And I think you started to say, Tracy, we can attach those to the HR website.
Yeah, I can. We can put them on the COVID resources site, but also at some point, maybe we can put them on our regular website too.
I think that's a great idea. And I think certainly, though, putting it on the COVID helps. I mean, hopefully for all of you who are here today, that's your real easy go-to resource where everything's all in one easy stop and shop location. So we certainly can do that after today to make sure it's there for you.
Ah, Lorena, the voice from above. It's on the DMD site, she said.
Okay.
Ooh, we've got questions pouring in. Okay, so the very first one, let me get to the top. On question 74, what are regular intervals?
So it's a fair question. You know, our county practice is that we don't like to have people go more than 90 days on you know, any accommodation leave requests, because during the course of that time, things can always change. So we want to make sure that we're engaging people in the interactive process, especially in situations where it's a temporary accommodation. We want to constantly be evaluating, is it still reasonable? Is it working? Do we have the documentation we need to support that it's appropriate? I would suggest, as it relates to the regular intervals though for COVID-19, that there is basis for considering that those intervals should be shorter, even as little as 30 days, because it's a situation that is so fluid and so changing that what we may have available to us as options seem to be changing almost day to day, week to week. So I would think that within, you know, 30 days, we would want to have some continued discussions, because as your department begins to reopen, there will be more fluidity to what you might be able to offer as an accommodation and how you might be able to work through it. So I would certainly suggest that you don't want to be beyond 90, but that there's every reason to say that a shorter time frame is appropriate in this environment associated with COVID that is changing so rapidly.
All right, next question. For workers' comp COVID-19 positive test, the employee filed a workers' comp claim, but it has not been accepted yet. What do we put on his time card until Sedgwick accepts the claim? Or not?
Ken, do you want that one? Or you?
If it hasn't been accepted yet, you'll just do the regular integration with whatever other sort of benefits he's integrating with, be it state disability, unemployment. Well, most likely would be state disability. They should be applying for all other available benefits first. You'll follow that integration, and chances are, if it does get approved, you'll have to go back and retroactively fix what the changes should have been, knowing that it was approved by Sedgwick.
And keep in mind that the governor's executive order, which is in place until July 5th, has the requirement that if you have COVID-specific sick leave that you have as an entitlement, so let's say attestation, for example, that you have to utilize that fully before Sedgwick will kick in with either temporary total disability benefits or 4850 if you're entitled to 4850. So they are going to have to utilize those things in advance of Sedgwick picking it up regardless.
Okay. Next question. If we conduct an interactive in response to the accommodation request to continue to telework due to a high-risk family member situation, should the supervisor be included in the interactive meeting or looped in after the interactive?
So some of that is, it's a little bit of a preferential in that there's nothing that requires the supervisor to be part of it or not be part of it, depending on your workflow of things. So sometimes we have interactives where we feel it's best to engage the employee first without the supervisor present, just to make sure we're understanding things and asking the right questions and exploring things and have all the facts sort of locked down before we get management involved in it. In this particular instance, depending on what it is, if really the request is maybe continued telework for a period of time because they have a high-risk family member, if you think it facilitates the process and makes it more efficient, you're certainly welcome to include the supervisor in those meetings from the onset. The only important issue is that we just need to continue to always be very cognizant of the fact that we cannot ask and the employee is not required to disclose either the diagnosis that makes them high risk or the diagnosis that makes the family member high risk. So you wanna make sure your management people are clear on that and that they don't accidentally overstep that bound by asking questions that are HIPAA protected.
Thank you, Catherine. Next question. So if an employee is saying that he or she has been dealing with a medical condition while teleworking, and the agency is now requesting people to return to the office, and this employee has requested to stay out to telework due to the medical stuff, do we need a doctor's note? And if so, are we supposed to put her on an accommodation for telework, or can we be flexible and see how the reopening goes and allow teleworking without the accommodation process? And that's, we can be flexible, correct?
So the one thing I would caution people to is that flexibility, yes, we can be flexible, but if we're asking that the entire department return at a certain point and we're making an exception for someone else, then really technically that is an accommodation. And we want to make sure that we have appropriate documentation because otherwise, it becomes unclear where are the limitations in the agreements between the department and the employee. Is it that they can do this for 30 days, or is it they can do it for 30 months, or they can do it forever? And without having the interactive process and really getting the documentation and things in place, it's certainly reasonable for the department to say, yes, in some of these instances right now, we think we can continue. But there may be a point where you believe operationally you can, it is now an undue burden and you're not able to reasonably accommodate. It becomes very complicated when there's not a really good documentation paper trail for the fact that this was an accommodation, that it is supported by medical documentation, and that it has finite agreed timeframes and intervals where you're going to continue to revisit it. So I know right now a lot of supervisors and managers are receiving requests from employees and that they're inclined to sort of just say, okay, yes, it's been working and we're gonna let it continue to work. But I think you need to be very, very careful that you are treating everyone in the same way. And if the ask is that everyone return and someone is being given an exception, I would strongly encourage you to make sure you are going through the accommodation process and getting the proper documentation and following up at the regular intervals. Because otherwise, I think down the road, it will be very difficult to sort of unravel some of this if it then becomes something you can't reasonably accommodate.
That makes sense. Thank you, Catherine. Next question, are we still accepting a written statement to extend an intermittent LOA due to COVID-19 school closure, even though the school calendar year ended?
You want me to take that one?
Sure.
Yes, please.
Yeah, we are accepting the written statements. I say if you can get some sort of backup documentation, that's even better. But we are accepting the written statement at this time.
And obviously, if the school closure has ended and it's now summer, it would right. be different, right? Like they can't use that as the excuse for being out.
Correct.
Okay. So in response to question 75, can teleworking be approved as a permanent accommodation, or can we have them come in 1 to 2 days a week if needed for assignment?
So again, each accommodation has to be evaluated on its own merits, as you would do with any other accommodation for any other person who claims to have a disability that prohibits them from doing their work in the usual fashion. We have to evaluate those things case by case, fact by fact. Permanent teleworking, one thing that is fairly clear is through ADA and FEHA is that an indefinite accommodation is not necessarily reasonable. So you're allowed to evaluate things and look at things, but you can most certainly, make decisions that are based on your operation. Some groups might say, yeah, if the person teleworks as they have been full time for the next 6 to 12 months, operationally, that is not an undue burden for us and that can work. There may be another group that can't do it for 6 to 12 more weeks because operationally it does not work for them. So you want to be clear in, that the accommodation is reasonable, that it allows the person to perform all their essential job functions and look to what the intervals are that you're willing to agree to with as it relates to the accommodation. But certainly, even if it's a long-standing accommodation, people still need to recertify their paperwork, and we need to still be meeting with them to ensure that things have not changed and to continue to assess that it is in fact working.
Okay, I think we've already addressed this one, but the next question is, we're allowing our managers to determine their staffing levels per team. If an employee states they cannot return to work, what rights do the supervisors have? We have a business need for them to be in the office.
And I think that's right. I mean, just to echo back to that is then those are the people who, if they're telling you it's, high risk for themselves or a family member, you need to go through your usual interactive process. You need to evaluate the accommodation. You need to talk about, with the employee, what are some reasonable accommodations that might be available that either you've identified or they can conceive of, and have the conversation as you normally would in any other situation where a person is asking for accommodation.
And the next question, since school is out but camps, etc., are not open, do we then need camp closure notices? Is that what will allow employees to continue to be out on COVID childcare leaves?
Yes, we would need camp closure notices to as backup documentation, and it would allow it to continue if that's their method of childcare, provided they haven't exhausted their 12 weeks.
Right, we just need some sort of statement, right, Ken, that whatever the normal child care is, if that's not available, they just need to state that, right, and attach notices if appropriate.
Yes, okay. That's the minimum, but I recommend we get at least something to back it up. If it's not available, then it's not, but at least they have something to provide, or they can use the closure notice in lieu of the statement too.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure people weren't just printing out camp closure notices, even though they wouldn't normally send their kid to the camp. You know what I mean? I'm just, right. We need something from the employees saying, this is where I would normally send my child, but it's not available.
Still a problem. Right.
Yeah. Okay, so next question. Can we ask for a doctor's letter to include that the employee or co-inhabitant is in the doctor's belief high risk without disclosing the diagnosis? We've received some vague letters about the employee would benefit from not being in the workplace without more.
And the answer to that is yes. You're certainly, you know, that's part of the thing that we need to understand. Is it, how would they benefit? Would they benefit because they prefer not to be in the workplace? Well, that's not based on a medical diagnosis or a disability, right? So we can certainly ask them to go back and have their doctor clarify that they fall into one of the high-risk categories associated with COVID-19. The doctor doesn't have to tell us, is it high-risk age? Is it that they're immunosuppressed? But certainly, you know, the letter back can also, we can make certain that the CDC guidelines are really clear as to who's deemed high risk. And so, you know, we can print that up and ask them to take it to the doctor and make sure that the doctor is affirming that they fall into one of these categories without telling us specifically which one. So, and I think this is a fair question in that what I do believe you guys are going to face over the course of the next couple weeks is that notes will be probably somewhat vague in this way, because there will be people who maybe feel more comfortable being at home, but may or may not fall necessarily into this high risk factor, but they will go to a physician and say, I'm teleworking, it's working okay, and I just feel nervous about going back to work. I'd prefer to stay at home. Well, that's not, you know, it's an understandable position, but it doesn't qualify as high risk. And that's where you guys are going to have to really look at these notes and start to really evaluate every word that's on the paper and be able to start to ask questions of, you know, what does the doctor mean by this or that employee? We're confused. We're having trouble figuring ways we can accommodate because we don't really clearly understand what the doctor is saying your limitation is. And if we don't understand it, we need you to go back and seek clarity.
Thank you, Catherine. What happens if the child or the minor is not enrolled in summer school, but the employee still does not have child care services?
They would be eligible for a continued leave of absence or intermittent leave of absence, whichever is appropriate, provided they have an exhausted FMLA.
Okay. All right. There's no more questions on the list or on the chat.
I'll give it one more second in case anybody has any others that just haven't popped up yet. Okay, looks like it's been pretty good, and we're exactly at 10:30, so we're going to wrap this show up. you know, like any good sitcom, the characters are faced with a problem, and it seems that after 30 minutes of hanging out and talking about it, somehow it's magically resolved, and along the way, they've had some laughs. So we hope that's true for you guys today, and that you're headed off to be the stars of your own COVID-19 leave of absence adventures. We will continue to be here to support however we can, and we'll reach out to see if there's questions for next week. And until then, we hope you stay safe, stay well, and we thank you for your time. Oh, it looks like we may have one really quick one that just popped in.
All right. Question. We have an extra help employee who is out on unemployment, and we are working to recertify her for the fiscal year. She is hesitant to return. Do we have to recertify to her, or should we let her go at this point? Oh, extra help, okay. So out, I guess, collecting unemployment, working to recertify her. Yeah, I mean, extra help, we don't have to recertify, right?
Correct. And I think this is a place where you do have some, you know, I mean, for an extra help employee, you can certainly say that you of course, you understand and respect there might be some hesitancy, but that's not something that you're required to accommodate. You're ready to return people back to work, and if they've used up all of their entitlements.
Oh. Yeah, there's a clarification that they're recertifying with HR. That's what they're talking about. And that's kind of what I was thinking, getting the authorization from HR to continue an extra help person. So yeah, your answer was right.
So hopefully we've answered that between my leave brain and Tracy's HR brain. If we didn't do it, let us know. Okay. Any others? Okay. Looks like we're good. So we will again sign off. Thank you guys so much for your time and good luck out there. We look forward to hearing how things are going when we see you next week. Bye.